Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Just a quick message before we start. The Lab is proudly backed by NordVPN, and what NordVPN does is it protects your internet activity so others can't see what you're doing online. It allows you to be the best version, or the worst, of yourself online when using NordVPN. It's like having a secret path on the internet that keeps you safe. It lets you watch shows from anywhere. With NordVPN, you can watch TV shows and movies that are only available in other countries. It's like having a magic key that unlocks all of the internet's doors and all the content out there that exists that might be geo-locked if you're in a country where it's not available. It's also really simple to use. NordVPN is easy to set up and use, so you don't need to be a tech expert to get it working. It's like having a friendly guard dog that takes care of your internet safety without needing any help. You can also save money by using NordVPN to access services in other countries that are cheaper than what they are in the UK. So if you wanted YouTube Premium, you could use a server that exists in Argentina and pay what, you know, natives of that country would pay. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/thelab. There's no risk with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support this podcast. The link is in the description below. Welcome to another episode of The Lab. Today we're talking about Postecoglou and the position he currently finds himself in at Tottenham Hotspur, and as a fan base, how we feel about his tactics and what's going on at the football club currently. Like, do we support him? Why is there dissenting voices? Should we have expected more from him? Should we be completely grateful about what he's delivered thus far? All of that stuff we're going to be discussing today with Ben. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you, mate. Very good. Looking forward to getting into it. I mean, it's the Fulham fallout felt a little bit cathartic, so I think it's kind of good to have a wider discussion about where we're going, because there's been a bit of, you know, there's been a lot of more fallout than any other result that we've had this season, which is natural off the back of a 3-0 defeat away to, on the face of it, a mid-table side. But there's much more kind of, there's much more context and nuance around that. So it's interesting to sort of get into with Ange.
Yeah. Yeah, because we were pre-warned, weren't we, before it started? And this is a message that's been warned thin on many podcasts, that there was an idea or a guide from Celtic fans about how you might feel about Postecoglou in your first season. And a lot of that was about, you know, there'd be times where you feel like this isn't working, that we're too open, we're going to get done, we're suffering bad defeats. And there were times where you it will click and you think, oh my God, this is the kind of football you want to see your club playing. After the Fulham result, there's been some criticism of Postecoglou's tactics, because we got outplayed. Silva done a job on Ange. And a lot of people, and I not say a lot of people, I got messages afterwards saying, like, how is Postecoglou getting outdone by other Premier League managers. But that's the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the competition that we're in. Postecoglou isn't the best manager that the Premier League has ever seen. Of course, he's going to come up against elite coaches, of which there are an abundance of in the Premier League. I've never seen a more talented manager group than the one that currently exists in the Premier League. Like, it's even Crystal Palace have a manager that could be a Tottenham Hotspur manager in Glasner. So the fact that Marco Silva was able to employ his tactics and these players reacted in the way that they did when they played Spurs and beat us 3-0 isn't a damning indictment of Postecoglou's overall ability to manage Tottenham Hotspur. It was just a game of football against a good manager with a good set of players who had their day against a very average and poor team on that day in Tottenham Hotspur. But what did you make of the criticism?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is fair, and I think that my initial reaction off the back of the game was to look more towards the players and certain individual performances, which weren't anywhere near at the level of what we've seen from certain individuals throughout the course of the season. But I think Ange came out and said after the game that Spurs seemed to lose our way for the first time this year after we conceded the second goal, which is, he said it's disappointing because we haven't done that before this year, which I'm not sure is 100% true. I think there have been other games where we've kind of drifted and maybe lost our way a little bit, but this so more than any, especially after the second one in. There was a period after that where Fulham just bombarded chance after chance, got the third goal, had a fourth goal.
I don't think
disallowed as well.
I don't think we had we've had a situation like that where they've scored a second. I'm sure there's been moments where we've been 2-0 down, but we've had the break, we've been able to reorganise, and Postecoglou's managed to get a tune out of Tottenham, where we were 1-0 down. Like, I think in the game, there's been a couple of games where we've had, you know, 10 minute spells where there's a free goal salvo, and but in this instance, you're expecting Spurs to react, and then they scored again in at the start of the second half. But it was uncharted territory as far as I was concerned, from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, I think in that sort of specific situation, it is the first time we found ourselves there. Because even with, I remember the Brighton game, we were 2-0 down at half-time, but the way we came out in the second half was immediately different. And it was like we had changed, but it was a wonder goal that made it 3-0, and then we sort of maybe lost our way off the back of that a little bit, but we still created more than enough chances to be competitive. And I think that's one of the things to take away from Fulham as well, is that if we take our chances in that game, it looks slightly different. But that doesn't have a bearing on the deserved nature of the result for Fulham, because they were the much, much, much better team. And like you said at the start, like, this is the most competitive Premier League we've ever seen, not just in terms of the quality of the teams, but the quality of the managers as well. I know Marco Silva's reputation isn't always thought of in the best light, because he's, you know, he went from Watford to Everton, couldn't make it work at Everton. But again, Everton is a club that there are so many kind of outside circumstances there for managers not to be, you know, not to feel like the perfect fit or not to make the best out of that situation. And I feel like he's found the perfect sort of fit at Fulham, and I think we're seeing the quality of manager that a lot of people did think was there. And he did a job on Ange, like you said.
He did do a job on Ange, but just on that, on Silva, he did really good work at Hull. Hull made a punt on him and brought him over. Did really good work with Hull. Watford gave him an opportunity in the Premier League, and within 14 games, he jumped ships and joined Everton. That's where the sort of criticism comes from him. It's not, and did a terrible job at Everton, because everybody does, not a terrible job, but everyone has a difficult time at Everton because, you know, the infrastructure at the club. But I don't think what was ever in doubt was his ability to manage teams and get the best out of them. And like you say, at Fulham, he's had a really sort of wholesome sort of career building, you know, time at the football club. You know, he's built a foundation there where he'll get a big club next. And I think that some fans of our club maybe look at it and go, and the Fulham manager should never be being able to find a way to tactically disrupt a Tottenham Hotspur manager. And I think a lot of us look at this as going, it's just Fulham rather than it's Marco Silva, and this is Tottenham rather than just Postecoglou. And you come into these games with a sense of arrogance and think that you should never be done 3-0 by Fulham at home. You shouldn't. It was a really bad result, but it happens in football. How big of an indictment was that on Postecoglou's ability to manage Tottenham, or was it not at all? It was just one of those games.
I think it was one of those games, to be honest. I think there are definitely things that you can pick out from it that Ange has got to learn from and kind of take into the rest of the season, because I don't think that he made changes quick enough. I know that's something that always gets thrown at certain managers in terms of substitutions, but it wasn't even in terms of that. Like, I thought Ibrahim had a really, really poor game on Saturday, but I don't think it was maybe helped by the fact that Ange didn't see that he was getting overrun in midfield and didn't maybe make a change to bring Sarr alongside him to give him a little bit more support. He felt a little bit isolated in there, but I think there was points of Basuma's individual performance where he really didn't help himself. So I think even that kind of deflects some of the criticism that can come Ange's way, because I don't think he must have got to get back hard enough. I thought his kind of lack of awareness in certain situations was really poor, which is a worry for me. He's had a bit of an up and down season. I think that game kind of encapsulated it a little bit. And I think it was a mix of the players not doing their job, but Ange's failure to adapt in that game on Saturday for me. Because the thing that worried me a little bit was that wasn't really, for the first time in a long time, there wasn't really a point in that game where I felt like we had any real control, because even when we went 3-0 down, the control came as a result of the fact that Fulham were happy with the lead and sat off. And yes, Ange made changes then and it looked a lot better, but even that you kind of have to take with that pinch of salt of that Fulham have sort of then played into our hands, allowing us to come onto them because they're defending a three-goal lead. I don't think it's necessarily an indictment on Postecoglou's ability to manage in the Premier League in the slightest, because like we said, with the context of how difficult this league is, how good a manager Marco Silva is, the fact that, you know, they've beaten Arsenal at home, they've had a decent record against the top sides at home as well. It's maybe just sometimes it's optics, and it's like the scoreline that feels like the worst part. It's 3-0 rather than going there and getting beat 2-0 with a very similar performance. So that, I don't think, played into his hands. And the fact that it could have been 4-0 if it wasn't for an offside goal and those kind of things. It felt like a real gut punch, and it felt like a sucker punch in terms of, especially off the back of the Villa result. And I think the context of the Villa result is really important in all of this as well, because we've had so many times with Spurs where we'll go and put in an amazing performance in a massive game against a top side and then follow that up with something similar to this. So it feels like sometimes it's hard to break out of that cycle, which I think makes that taste that's left in the mouth of the back of this result a lot worse. And then it reflects on Ange worse, it reflects on the players worse and all those things as well. But that's not to say that there aren't valid criticisms to take from this game at all, because I did think his in-game management was particularly poor on Saturday.
Ben, I want to move on from the Fulham game and think about the season as a whole. And the title of this podcast is Postecoglou, Is It Working? What for you works really well with Postecoglou's system? And again, I don't want to caveat this with, oh, but we were shit under Conte, or it's been transitional. We all know that, and we all accept it, and as a base fact, that's where we should talk from. But if we go forward knowing that that's a given, what do you think works really well with Postecoglou's system this season?
I think there's a lot that works well. I think it's hard to say what I'm about to say without what you just said about kind of comparing it to Conte. But I think, well, what I would say is that I think the thing that impresses me a lot is our pressing ability, which was non-existent under Conte, but that's not to say that it's only good as a result of how poor we were at it last season. That is just how it is reflected in the numbers.
We didn't press at all, did we?
Exactly. And it's not just a massive improvement. It's an improvement to the point where we are one of the best teams in the league at it. We rank first for higher turnovers. We've got the most ending to a goal, which I think is massive in terms of how we play. I did a video on TikTok talking about Christian Romero and how actually I think that his impact on the team, and why I think he's so important, is not just what he brings at the back in terms of his, you know, quality abilities as a defender, but he is one of our most important players in terms of the press. And the amount of times that we can turn the ball over on the halfway line and create chances because of how well he reads the game and is so aggressive, that's something that's really impressed me with how Ange set up the team to make that happen.
Just quickly that, and I want to hear about how Ange Postecoglou is set up to do that. But one of my takeaways thus far is that we don't press well. This is very much probably my lack of understanding of such things. But I feel like our press is a little bit disjointed and perhaps not as as cohesive as it could have been or should have been and has been previously. But are you saying statistically we do press well?
Yeah, like I said, we've got the most amount of high turnovers in the Premier League, which is winning the ball back in the opposition half. We've got the second highest PPDA, which is the metric they use to measure presses, which is passive per defensive action. So we're second in that behind Liverpool. So essentially we allow the least amount of passes for an opposition team before we win the ball back. And that's, I think sometimes with pressing that people think it's always, it's only when it's high up the pitch and it's all when you're pressing on the edge of their own box. But actually, I think Tottenham do press well.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's completely fair though, because I think a lot of this is about, so many of these words kind of get chucked about and people then just see, pressing has always kind of existed, but it's something, because it's been such a focus of certain managers over the last sort of 10 years, and people, the examples that often get shown are teams winning the ball back on the edge of maybe a team's penalty area, when actually these kind of occur all over the pitch, but actually Tottenham just happen to be very good at it in the opposition half, which obviously then leads to chances, then leads to goals. Like I said, we've had the most high turnovers leading to a goal. We've scored 8 goals by doing that. That was very evident in the Villa game of how well we pressed. And I think it's one of those things where when it's kind of symptomatic of the team, really. When it's really working, it looks amazing. And that's what happened at Villa. But I think consistency throughout the season, our numbers have been pretty impressive. We've got the fourth highest press in the league as well in terms of distance up the pitch. So kind of going back to what I said, as well. And yeah, that has really impressed me, because when it works, it looks amazing and we can be really, really effective with it. I think as well, like how something that has massively impressed me and it's not been consistent enough, especially this calendar year for sure, is how devastating we can be. We spoke about this before, but I just don't think many teams have that ability to really put the foot on the throat like we do and we have done. And you mentioned earlier our ability to sort of
destroy,
score goals in clusters, and destroy teams in a very short period of time in games and really take the game away from them quickly. And the reality of the Premier League is that that's not something that's going to happen every week, because teams set up differently. You can't always expect people to set up in a shape that really suits you, which is why the pressing is so important, because sometimes you've then just got to go and make it happen, which is what we did at Villa. Villa sat in deep. They didn't play like the way we expected them to, or certainly the way, you know, from a fan's perspective of the fact that we wanted them to. So you've got to go and get after them and make that happen. And that's what we did in that second half there, which was so impressive. I think our sort of leading on from the Romero point as well, in terms of our pressing, I think our back line, when everybody is fit, I think is one of the best in the league. And I thought our fullbacks had a poor display on Saturday, but I think for how consistently well they've performed throughout the course of the season, how much of a physical burden is kind of laid at them in terms of how much distance they have to cover and, you know, these pockets that they've got to find themselves picking up. And that comes naturally to Porro and Adoghi, because they're exceptional players, but it's a very demanding role. So I've been incredibly impressed when everybody's fit. I think we've only lost 2 games in the Premier League when Romero and Van de Ven have both been playing together. And obviously one of them was Wolves, and then that game we didn't have either of the fullbacks. So it's one of those things where we know that when that back line is at its best, it's super, super impressive on the ball and off the ball as well. And I think that kind of helps us in terms of our ability to dominate teams in possession, but also be super threatening. So I think those are the main things really that have really, really stuck out to me this season and encourages me in terms of what we can do going.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Forward,
yeah, because a lot of the times when we score, like you know, you mentioned the game, who is it when we score 3 on the bounce? Is it Fulham?
Brentford.
Brentford, that's what I meant,
yeah,
Brentford
and Palace as well.
and Palace, of course, as well, and we scored late goals. Those were kind of clutch moments where you're relying on individual quality, and no doubt there was some sort of tactical implementation of...
Beneficial, yeah, yeah.
Beneficial moments where you're scoring goals and it just happens. Everything in between, though, is tactical and systematic. And so I just feel like it might come. Those bits where we score goals in small moments are fantastic, but that is a symptom of what's going on generally. And so if we can find a way of, and Postecoglou can find a way of making it work, then a really positive future is there to enjoy for all of us. But what doesn't work well?
I think, well, one of the things that's already touched on was Ange's in-game management at times. I think that was evident in the Fulham game. But I think that leads on to a bigger problem around the midfield, which is interesting because, you know, obviously you've done multiple podcasts throughout the season, and a lot of them have been focused on how good our midfield has been at points with how well Bissouma started at the start of the season, and obviously how good Maddison's been as well, and obviously Bentancur coming back, and what a revelation Sarr's been. But at times, it does feel like it's a little bit of a problem area. I don't think we've got that perfect number six profile yet, despite how good Bissouma has been at points. And it might feel reactionary off the back of the Fulham game, but it is an area that I think I'd maybe consider upgrading in the summer, which is, you know, when we did the last podcast together talking about our summer plans, it wasn't really something that we talked about too much. And I'm conscious of being reactionary in that aspect, but there have been games where I think Bissouma's lack of discipline and awareness, not, I'm not talking discipline in the sense of getting sent off, because, you know, those things can happen, and especially in a midfielder playing in that position, but I think lack of tactical discipline and, you know, not being in the right position and being slow to get back. I saw that really was something that was a bugbear of mine on Saturday against Fulham, is that Fulham were just allowed to run into the box at will, it seemed, from runners from deep, and it just felt like Bissouma, to be fair, he was doing a lot of it on his own, but he just wasn't busting the gut quick enough for me. And sometimes, and this kind of leads back to the overall thing with Ange, is that actually sometimes you have to single out individual players' performances and say they've let the system down. And sometimes if certain players aren't playing at the best, then everything can sort of fall apart, even though they might not be playing awfully. It's just if it's an amalgamation of those individual performances across the pitch, everything can sort of break down. I think that's sort of what happened on Saturday too. But that's an area that I think we need to kind of really figure out what is our best balance, and whether we think we need to upgrade that deep, you know, defensive midfield player, number six position in the summer. Because Bissouma in spurts can look amazing. The way he carries the ball forward is amazing. The way he can break up play at points. But I think if you want to be a top, top side, there's an elevation of that you need to go and find. And that's what Arsenal have done. And that's what, I wouldn't say City have done it, because they always seem to kind of find these players and find a way. But Rodri's been there for a long time, so it's not a new thing. But his importance has become even stronger over the last like 2 years, or there's certainly been a lot more of a spotlight on it, which I think then shines the spotlight on us and says, right, well, if that's what you want to get to, Spurs, you know, Spurs will never get to the consistent level of success of someone like City, but, you know, if that's what you want to be in terms of the team that you see on the pitch every week, then that's an area that I think needs looking at. I still don't think we've fully figured out either whether we're better with Sonny or Richarlison through the middle. They're so different and they're amazing profiles to have. And I actually thought, again, it's easy to say in hindsight that we really missed Richarlison on Saturday, because I thought that was probably Sonny's weakest performance through the middle. Everything just seemed to bounce off him. He couldn't hold the ball up. There was a lot made of our wingers. Kulusevski and Johnson came under a bit of fire off of Saturday, but I don't think Sonny did anywhere near enough to bring them into play, because his hold-up play was really, really poor, and everything just sort of seemed to bounce off of him.
Richarlison's not available, is he?
Exactly, and it's one of those ones. Yeah, if Richarlison was probably fully fit, then I think that he maybe would have got the nod. But again, it's easy to say in hindsight.
Ben, let me ask you a question. Sorry, mate. Do you think that there is a fair argument that Postecoglou should be a little bit more pragmatic, or is it important for him just to sort of double down on his idea of how football should be played and what's going to happen at Tottenham over the years that he manages us, or would you some people are asking or demanding actually that we're a little bit more sort of reactive to how the game's going, rather than just staunchly saying if plan A isn't working, then do it better.
Yeah, I think for me, that's what it feels like. It feels like it should just be, every team has to have a plan B, but I think a lot of people's plan B is almost plan A, but make it better. And I think that's what we've got to do. And there are certain elements in games where we do have to be more pragmatic, but I don't think it was off the, that's not what stuck out to me, the Fulham game. I don't think we were too, I think there was this outside perception around Spurs because of how Ange has sort of come out publicly and, he has doubled down on the way that he wants to approach things, and he wants to be ambitious and he wants to play this way. And it's kind of, that is the embodiment throughout the whole club, and that's kind of the mantra that we go by. And that's, he said, it's who we are. But I think in individual moments, at certain moments in certain games, maybe he needs to be a bit smarter at realising when tides are turning or teams are getting on top of us, because that's what happened against Fulham on Saturday. In that first half, there were so many, and the second goal as well, there were so many times where they're almost 3-on-1 at our midfield, and then they've then created an overload against our backline as well. So I think he does maybe need to be more pragmatic in games, but I don't think the approach overall needs to change. I think it's just about making it better, and that's when the patience element comes into it, and the remembrance, this is our first season under.
Yeah, and this is it. Like, he's got this idea, and I'm sure his idea about how Spurs play is very different to what we're doing currently. I'm sure he has an all-conquering, undefeatable, we will never take our foot off your throat type style of football. But then you have these on the journey to being that. If we can ever achieve it, and I want to ask you questions about what you feel about what the future might hold, but in order to get to that position of what Postecoglou and what we all hope is the holy grail of football at Spurs, you need moments of learning, and the Fulham game and Wolves and many games this season, there are moments of learning, and he can use those demonstrations of our frailties and our failures to teach the players. And, we all hope that we wouldn't have to go through these things. And as fans, you don't see any of that, and you assume that might be what's happening. But these things could be a catalyst for what might come in the future. And I hate to say it, but Arteta and losing to Brentford, actually losing their first three games of the season before last. Yeah. They were bottom of the league. They'd lost three on the bounce. But all of that was Arteta downloading information and understanding what wasn't working. No team goes from what we were last... Shit, I'm doing it. No team goes from what we were last season under Conte to what we are currently without bumps in the road. And hopefully Fulham is a bump in the road, and as fans we have to expect or assume that it is a bump in the road, because if you think it's a complete failing of Postecoglou's ideas and his tactics, then we've got nowhere to go. But the better position to be in is, let's look at it from a more sort of wholesome perspective, in that he's learning and the players are learning that these are the things that you did wrong in that game, and this is how we're going to make it right going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I think as well, when it comes to the conversation around what doesn't work, I think a lot of what doesn't work is highlighted in what's missing. And then, that just goes to show as well that Ange Postecoglou has only had two transfer windows, and it's clear that Spurs want to be ambitious in the summer. So these things are fixable. One of the other things I was going to talk about is that, and it's been such a big conversation this season about that lack of 1v1 dribbly winger profile, that in these games where it's not working, they're almost a bit of a get out of jail free card, where just give the ball to them and try and make something happen. We haven't really got that kind of profile in the squad, certainly as a winger. So the way in which the system doesn't work at times is, I think, more of a reflection of the work that is still there to be done, rather than any incapability on Postecoglou's end to make the system work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. Do you genuinely think Ange is right for Tottenham?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think in terms of off the pitch, I think he's the perfect kind of leader that you want as a football club, in terms of the guy that he is, the character of the man, you're proud to have him represent your football club. And, you know, sometimes that means very little if you're not seeing that pride reflected in how you feel about the team on the pitch. But for the majority of the season, that has been the case. And he has done so much to really make it work and feel like we're going somewhere. I think he's 100% the guy. I think we've got a manager who's got a better winning mentality than either of the two win now managers that we've employed post Poch in Conte and Mourinho. And there's a difference between coming in and putting your medals on the table, which it felt more like that was almost the approach from Conte and Mourinho. Maybe that's not fair, but I think with Postecoglou, the way that he speaks about the club and the way that he's so open about what he wants to achieve, there's no public kind of outcry for I need more, you know, and we're never going to be able to get to this point unless X, Y, and Z, which we've had under the past couple of managers before. And so I think in terms of the style as well, it's so in keeping with what we've kind of been used to as Spurs fans, and to have that feel-good factor is important, and the feeling is the most important thing. But that, you know, you don't want it to be futile and not want it to turn into anything. But I think that because of all of those things, I think he is the guy. I don't know. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, I do. I do feel the same way. I've never been more hopeful of our... Well, actually, I feel the same about Spurs right now as I did with Pochettino. The only difference is that Pochettino didn't have what we had before Postecoglou took over. And again, it seems like you can't talk about Postecoglou's reign without talking about what happened before. With Pochettino, it was almost like we were middling under AVB at Sherwood, which was 6 months of football, which it felt interim, and it was interim. But it's clear that something good is happening at the football club, outside of what Daniel Levy wants to do in terms of ticket prices and everything else. But generally, like what's happening in terms of recruitment and how Postecoglou is as our statesman, as a mouthpiece, everything feels good about it. And I just like, there seems to be an instance that everything must work immediately or it's completely fucked. There are some fans out there who are operating or thinking about Tottenham Hotspur in that way. And the reality is, it's not. There's no quick fix. There's no sort of. There's no guarantee ever that Spurs are going to win a Premier League title, because the way the game's gone and the difficulties now that any club outside of, you know, Manchester City and previously Chelsea, but you got Manchester United coming back, and what Arsenal are doing as well. There's no guarantee ever that we're going to win in a Premier League, but from a day-to-day perspective, you have to feel pride about what Postecoglou's brought to Tottenham. I feel so good thinking about my football club now, bar poor results against Fulham and Wolves or whatever it might be. But generally, you think about Spurs and you're thinking, are we moving in a positive direction? The answer is yes. And if the answer is always yes, then we're in a good space. The minute it turns to no, which we had towards the end of Pochettino's reign at Spurs, was... Even though we were marching towards a Champions League final, it felt like something wasn't right at the football club. Whereas right now, that doesn't feel like the case. Like, you've got Postecoglou talking about free transfer windows. You've got a financial fair play system that benefits Tottenham hugely due to the revenue generated by Daniel Levy's commercial activity. But whatever we are, we're in an incredible position. So we are... While we should never expect to win trophies, given the lay of the landscape, we're in a good position to do so. And that leads me on to the final question here: is in your heart, what can we achieve with Postecoglou at the club? In your heart, like, what does your heart say?
My heart says, I think that we
fucking everything.
You know, yeah, we could, but we can. You know, I think that there is such an open, you know, the Premier League over the next few years is going to be an incredibly fascinating battle at the top, because of the fact that Liverpool will be going through transition under a new manager. This idea of transition doesn't necessarily mean that they won't be competing again. And I think people are almost assuming that a little bit, but it does.
There'll be a massive drop off, though. You can't, the institutional. Yeah. nature of Liverpool and what Klopp has created is that Klopp is Liverpool. In the same way that Arsene Wenger was Arsenal and Bill Nick was Spurs. Daniel Levy is Spurs. All those things are massive. You can't just shift a manager of as influential as Klopp is without it having a massive impact, even if it is Alonso coming in or whoever it might be. It might even be Pep Guardiola. He won't be able to... Maybe he could, but you know, do you know what I'm saying? Is that it'll be massively impactful for him leaving, but they won't disappear. You're right.
No, they're not gonna go away. And it might just be one of those things where even if they're not competing for the title, they are still one of the buffers that stand in the way of Tottenham being able to get there. Because if they're that massive drop off from Liverpool, you're dropping off from such a high point where even you still imagine that they're gonna fall somewhere in and around the top four. So they're still gonna be an annoyance to Spurs for sure. And obviously then it becomes a massive opportunity for Arsenal because of the path that they've sort of developed on. But I think that...
It's all cyclical, isn't it?
Exactly. These things, we saw it with Pochettino. You know, we got to that point where Arsenal are. And I know Arsenal were in a better position to kick on than we were, but sometimes you don't expect it, but these cycles do end more abruptly than you think. And that's not going to say that Arsenal aren't going to be in tight races for the next few years, but that drop-off might be there for them as well as a natural kind of end to the cycle that needs refreshing. And Tottenham didn't get that refreshment in the past, but you do feel like with how ambitious that Ange wants to be, that squad will be refreshed consistently with what he thinks he needs to challenge. And I think when you've got a manager that's that ambitious, you're always going to fall somewhere near where you want to be. And where he wants to be is winning the title. He said that fourth isn't the prize for Tottenham. It's not a trophy for us. And I love that attitude because I think we have had managers in the past that think it's good enough. But I think the times that they thought it was good enough, that was reflected in the fan base as well because it was such a far cry from where we were before. But now we know that with the infrastructure and all those things that you've talked about, that we're in a position to challenge. And my heart says that we can win silverware for sure. And I think that, again, whether it's an FA Cup, League Cups, potentially European success, all of that is going to come from that ambition that the manager shows because, you know, Spurs might not win a Premier League under Ange Postecoglou. It would be very, very tough. But it's such a, you know, cringy phrase, but people say, you know, if you aim for the moon, you're always going to fall somewhere amongst the stars. And if that means that Tottenham pick up silverware along the way as a result of shooting as high as you can, then that's still going to be a massive success. So I think that Spurs will win, will have domestic success under Postecoglou in terms of a one of the cups.
If you want to operate...
A long European one as well.
Yeah, if you want to operate like a massive club, you need a manager who thinks that way. So yeah, he's right. He's saying like fourth place, like if we get it, if we don't get it, it doesn't matter. What we need to be operating generally is one that wants to win the league. And that's what you want to hear from your manager. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter what our heart says or what our head says. The statesman of our football club is Ange Postecoglou, and he's saying fourth place isn't a conversation. We're not interested. If we fall short, we fall short. If we get third, we finish third. What our drive is and what our aspirations are is to finish first. So anything in between is irrelevant to some degree, and that's rare. That's a rare thing for us to have to contemplate. Because as fans, you're just going, but I understand what you're saying, Postecoglou, but finish fourth though, right? Yeah, gets Champions League.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, the system... The plans aren't about where we finish in the league. It's about building something that will eventually challenge for the Premier League, regardless of whether or not you finish in Champions League places. And that makes me most excited. Thank you very much, Ben.
Well, good, mate. Pleasure, as always.
If people want to find you, how do they do that?
You can find me, Ben Talks Football, on TikTok. A lot of consistent daily Spurs content on there. The Daring and Doing podcast as well that we've just recently started. You can find us on all podcast platforms and TikTok and Twitter and YouTube as well. We've got some exciting stuff coming out this weekend to sort of have a bit of a breath and a break away from the film result. We're going to do some fun stuff around what our Tottenham hot takes are. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And that's pretty much it, really. But thank you very much for having me on again, mate.
You say that. What the one thing you haven't mentioned is that this is going to be a weekly occurrence, me and you talking about Tottenham Hotspur.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to getting started. Yeah.
Good to know where your priorities lie, though. Cheers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, make sure you listen to the lab as well, and you know, it's gonna be a weekly thing.
Cheers, Ben.
And yeah, all good, mate. Thanks.
Sports Social Podcast Network.